Making an LSA Earn Its Keep on your school's flight line. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome in to the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot. Today we're going to divert a little bit from our normal practice of talking right off the top about a safety issue and talk about what does it take to make a light sport aircraft trainer pencil out. Bob Miller Flight Training is about to get in the next few weeks sometime a new Cessna Skycatcher, and we thought this might be a good time to make that case because a lot of flight schools seem to have been timid about putting their toes in the LSA waters. Bob, thanks for taking some time out for our listeners today.
Well, thanks, Paul, and we're thrilled. I mean, absolutely thrilled to be bringing this airplane into the fleet. As our listeners know, this has been an on-again, off-again program for Cessna, trying to get this airplane through production and into the field. We've been using a light sport aircraft, a very nice airplane, a Navigator 600, a Polish-built airplane, and we've been using that for 2 years now. It's just it's a very nice airplane. And we use that airplane as a way to get ourselves into the light sport business. And then now having built a practice, if you will, we're the only light sport school that's flying a new airplane, something other than a vintage type airplane from the 40s and 50s, which they themselves are great airplanes, but folks today are liking the glass and they like the smell of new leather and seeing new technology. We're the only ones doing that, and as a result, we've got quite a following. But I had an opportunity to fly the Skycatcher just a couple of weeks ago. And I thought I was, going to be experiencing just another model, make, model airplane. But I want to tell you, this has been a real experience. The light sketch of the Skycatcher is just everything Cessna's been promising and more. It's just a wonderful, wonderful machine. It's easy to fly, and we're thrilled to get it into the flight school. But let me just fast forward real fast, Paul, anticipating a question. You said, how do we make it pencil out?
Right.
And we also do a lot of discovery flights. These are $99 flights as a way of introducing people to the wonderful world of flight and using that technique as to bring them into the school. Well, we discovered something quite by accident. All of the flights that we had been doing in our Cessna 172SP, our G1000 glass cockpit airplane. And the results were mixed. We were not getting the conversions that we wanted to see, that is, the number of people going from discovery flight into actually taking lessons. As costs were squeezing us a little bit with the cost of operating that airplane and putting an individual in it, we decided to start using our light sport airplane for discovery flights. And I did so, questioning whether or not this would work. And what I discovered, not only did it work, it worked very, very successfully. People's first-time experience in a sport airplane, a light sport airplane, it's far less intimidating to the novice, to the person who's not experienced light airplanes before, than the complexity of a G1000-equipped Cessna 172. It's a fun airplane, light sport, and when they get in that and they fly that for the first time, they say almost to the individual, hey, I could do this. Mm-hmm. I could learn how to do this. And when we talk about the reduced cost of flying light sport, the sticker shock is not nearly as great as when we tell them what it costs to get a private pilot certificate today. We tell them what it costs to get a sport pilot certificate, which is just about half. So light sport has a plus, and we're going to be using our new Skycatcher almost exclusively for our discovery flights as a way of bringing new people into the fold.
Okay, now, you've got one of the first Skycatchers off the line, obviously. I mean, I think you said you have a serial number in the 30s somewhere, and it's being purchased by a student. Are you going to do a lease back on this? Does this have the same access to these, I don't want to say creative financing, that has kind of a negative connotation, but some of the more, does it have access to the same financial arrangements that a 172 would have?
Does it offer the same benefits? Yes, it does, and that's exactly what we're doing, Paul. We one of our students purchased the airplane with the intent of leasing it back to us for use in the flight school. The student, of course, will use it for their own recreational flying, but the purpose is to have an airplane in the flight school that will become very actively used, and we already have a waiting list of students wanting to get on it, to start instruction on it. That coupled with the Discovery flights, I have only one small disappointment, and that is I can't get another one right behind it. Mm. If I could, I would, believe me.
Well, now, I know you're feeling about vintage equipment, and I use that term politely, as it relates to many flight schools, you know, running 30-year-old beaters, jalopies with wings, basically, as their training aircraft. Obviously, there's a financial advantage to doing that on the cost side. Maybe it hurts you on the revenue side. But what about training in a brand new aircraft? I mean, for the price of a brand new Cessna Skycatcher, you could find a reasonably decent Cessna 172 that was a few years old.
All right. This goes to a marketing strategy that any flight school has to decide. We could operate a Walmart, Kmart type of flight school and offer bargain basement training at the lowest possible cost. That was option one. We could also offer a much higher type of Bloomingdale's, Saks Fifth Avenue, Lord & Taylor, Abercrombie Fitch type of more upscale flight training. That was the marketing strategy that we decided to follow, the more upscale. It's difficult for a Walmart to also be a high-end store. We made the choice. And since we made the choice to go on the high end, we charge about 30% more than our nearest competition, but we're the only flight school in the area flying brand new glass cockpit high technology airplanes. It's working very nicely for us because at this demographic, we're working with individuals who are somewhat immune from a lot of the economic chaos that's going on in the community. We're not working with factory workers per se. We're not working with individuals who are living from paycheck to paycheck. We're working with business owners, professionals, architects, lawyers, engineers. And this has served us very well. And it's these same individuals who have the wherewithal to purchase airplanes. It's these same individuals who see the business benefits of owning an airplane. So for us to fly or offer a beater, as you call it, a 30-year-old airplane, our constituency simply would not welcome it, just like perhaps a Bloomingdale or a Lord & Taylor customer would not like standing in line for any length of time to buy their goods. It's just a marketing call that we made, and it's working nicely for us. I think it's working nicely for the industry as well. The high cost of learning how to fly is something that none of us right now can do anything about. And it's unfortunate that the high cost of learning to fly may be, forcing some people out of the industry or preventing some from getting in. But we have to go where the market is. And right now the market is such that we have to work with the higher end demographic.
All right, Bob, when we come back from the break, I want to talk about this time of year and Bob Miller flight training. And what I'm talking about is sometimes you have students come from fairly substantial distances to fly in actual IFR rather than pretend IFR. Bob Miller is my guest. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Freedom through control. Cirrus has completely reinvented the personal aircraft and the entire experience of owning a personal aircraft. It's a bold new take on private aviation that we call Cirrus Flying 2.0. You set the schedule. You chart the course. You're in control.
Piperjet.
Hypersport.
Piper Match.
Global Expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/Piper Aircraft.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller. And talking about IFR and the advantages of flying in real IFR as opposed to under the hood and the special opportunity that Western New York offers at this time of year. Bob, you at one time had a fair number of people coming from far away to fly in actual clouds and deal with actual forecast icing conditions as opposed to the theoretical. And you have been also a proponent of going someplace with mountains if you want to learn to fly in mountains and that sort of thing. How is that going? Is that still drawing a number of students at this time of year to Western New York?
Absolutely. We're drawing students from the warm, sunny climates up here for that very reason. And I think, in fact, the students that we're drawing, perhaps because that's who we're attracting, are our over-the-airwaves readers that have heard me say time in and time out that learning to fly in simulated conditions under the hood is, in my opinion, a gross waste of time. It's almost a hoax being perpetrated on unsuspecting students by otherwise perhaps well-intentioned flight instructors. It simply does not work. Now, before my simulator aficionado critics come after me, let me say that simulators and hood work works fine for teaching procedures. If we want to teach a procedure, we want to teach how to intercept a localizer, how to track a glide slope, sure, we can do that under the hood. But when it comes to preparing students for real instrument flying conditions in the real world, that can only be done, in my opinion, in the real world. We cannot simulate mountains for mountain flying. We cannot simulate riverbeds for learning how to fly off of glaciers and muddy bottoms of rivers. You have to get into that, and sometimes you have to travel to where those conditions exist in order for you to do that. We see just far too many accidents occurring today with individuals who have no business being inside the clouds, even though they have an instrument rating. Even worse, Paul, we have no business allowing flight instructors to carry that double I after their CFI initials, who themselves have never been in the clouds. And unfortunately, that happens far too often as well.
Okay, what specifically is better about it? I mean, obviously, you can create any kind of scenario sitting in the comfort of a simulator booth. What is it about flying in actual conditions that is superior?
Oh, no question about it. The sense that you can get up and walk out of a simulator, and I've spent many hours inside of a simulator, and I have sweated inside a simulator, but in the final analysis, you know that when all heck breaks loose, you can get up and get out. In real instrument conditions, you can't. I've worked with dozens of students in real instrument conditions, and I've let them sweat, and I've said, you're going to handle this situation. You're going to have to let us get out. We've encountered real emergencies in IFR conditions, like alternator failures and vacuum failures in real conditions. This is where you develop the confidence to know that you can do it in the real deal. If all you've ever done was in the simulator or under a hood, and then you get out there for the first time, your first reaction is fear, anxiety. I've never been here before. It's a strange environment. It's not that they lack the skills to do it. You can teach the skills to do this kind of thing under the hood or in a simulator, but you cannot teach the mental discipline to focus in order to apply those skills. If your mind begins to panic, if you begin to panic, your brain will quite literally overload. It will shut down, and you can barely remember your name, much less how to dial in a localizer. That's why you need to get these skills done firsthand, developed firsthand in actual instrument conditions.
All right. Well, if someone has the desire to do that, is it a good time of year in terms of availability to come to Western New York?
Well, yeah, wintertime flying is, we have more instrument conditions from October through May than any other time of the year. And, we train on instruments all year long, right on through the winter. And it doesn't have to be Bob Miller flight training. It would certainly be anybody north of the Mason-Dixon line. Come on up, go to a flight school where you can arrange with a flight instructor who will take you out into actual conditions for your training. If you're fortunate enough, and I say fortunate enough, to live in Arizona, Mesa, or down in New Mexico, that's wonderful. That's great. I envy you people, folks down there, enormously. But get on a, you know, get on a commercial airplane, come on up north someplace, get a week or two of training in actual instrument conditions, and then go back and fly in Mesa and Phoenix, and at least you know you've had the training, and then do that perhaps once a year, maybe once every 2 years, to get that real actual experience. And it's simply like learning to fly in high density airspace. You know, we take people into New York City, into the four New York airports, to let them develop high density airspace experience. Once you've tasted the real deal, then when you're in the real deal by yourself, it's a much more reassuring experience.
All right, Bob, we'll encourage people to get in touch with you through the website if that's their inclination, and we will look forward to talking to you again next Monday.
Thanks, Paul.
You can always find the latest edition of Bob Miller's newsletter, as well as the archives, at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.